Hello, Devils fans and hockey fans, and welcome back to the Garden State of Hockey podcast. Joining early in the morning here on the weekend because, you know, we never sleep when it comes to hockey coverage, even though hockey isn't really much to cover right now, gotta say. And we decided to dip into our pool of past Devils games, Devils legacy wins, some playoff ones, some regular season ones. We chose a playoff game this time from a season that we've already covered on this podcast, but we covered a game that took place, what was it, two games before this one? It was the Game 7 between the Devils and the Florida Panthers. And John Fisher is joining me to break down today Game 2 between the Devils and the Philadelphia Flyers that took place. I don't remember if it was still the Wachovia Center. No, it was the Wells Fargo Center already in Philadelphia.
Correct. You are absolutely correct. On May 1st, 2012, it was starting at 7:40 Eastern Standard Time, or Eastern Daylight Savings Time. It doesn't matter. It was 7:40 in the evening at the Wells Fargo Center. Over 20,000 in attendance. Most of them wearing really hideous orange jerseys or the playoff T-shirt that said "Great Balls of Flyer." Mm-hmm. Needless to say, Dan, it's yet another example of why I regard them as the second-rate rivals and not our hated second rival.
Well, so let's give a little bit of context. And we gave a lot of the context of the 2012 season when we talked about that Game 7 win. And that Game 7 win wasn't possible without the Game 6 win that preceded it, also in overtime. And coming into this Game 2, the Devils actually played yet another overtime game as they lost in Game 1 to Philadelphia, as Danny Briere scored once, had it waved off, and then scored again to give the Flyers the Game 1 win. And now, at this point, the Devils are coming off of three straight overtime games in the playoffs, and they also received the news that most people suspected, I think, going into this series, but it was that Ilya Kovalchuk had a lower body injury and wasn't going to be able to play in this Game 2. And you can kind of tell as you look through the Florida series that he's been hampered, and in Game 1 against the Flyers, he definitely wasn't feeling himself. So they left him in New Jersey to receive some care, and he did not participate in Game 2, which was a big deal. The Devils are down 1-0 in this series already. They're on the road, and this is a potent Flyers team that was putting up a lot of offense against the Penguins, so this was a very, very big, important game, and this is the game where the momentum really swung in the series. And watching this back, you can even tell the period in which the momentum swung in this series.
Right. And just to really emphasize the context here is that Kovalchuk was a top 10 NHL scorer in 2011-2012. Right. The Devils offense was led by Kovalchuk, Zach Parise, Patrick Eliash in that order. Since they were without Travis Zajac for most of the season due to a pectoral injury, which gave Adam Henrique his shot, who is then a rookie. But the Flyers were an absolutely stacked team on offense, led by Claude Giroux, as mentioned, the aforementioned Danny Briere, a burgeoning Jacob Voracek. They had a lot of useful role players
in
Max Talbot.
Couturier, all those staples of the Flyers.
A young Couturier. Mm-hmm. The Flyers, like, in retrospect, you could argue that this was kind of an odd season for them because one, I think, expected... It wasn't necessarily guaranteed that they were going to be a good team, mm-hmm. but it turned out that Couturier turned out very good. Matt Reed turned out to be very good. Simmons fit them like a glove. A lot of things went their way, so to speak, and Brizgalov had a very good season. And on top of that, they just beat the Pittsburgh Penguins in a series that could be described as, well, defenseless, since there wasn't much in the way of defending or penalty killing in that series, as the Flyers went some ridiculous... like 45% point power play conversion rate, something ridiculous in that
they,
level.
They had something like, what, like 10 goals in the first six games against the Penguins?
10 power play goals, and that's something like 10 out of 26. So it's just remarkable. And I want everybody to keep that percentage in mind because it does play a role in this particular game.
Mm-hmm. And another thing that plays a role in this particular game, given the absence of Ilya Kovalchuk, is the fact that the Devils went with seven defensemen in their lineup, which pushed Peter Harold to a forward position on the fourth line. And weirdly enough, on the first power play unit, taking Kovalchuk's place. And it also enabled Adam Larsson to draw into the game for his first playoff appearance at the time. And that, as you know, will become important later on.
Yes, and related to that, there were some changes in the Devils lineup in light of the lack of Kovalchuk. For example, the Devils' fourth line, which was turned out to be a beloved fourth line, the CBGB line, well, that got broken up as Steve Bernier was moved up to play with and I hope I get this right, I want to say it was Ponikarovsky and Henrique.
Yes.
And then your top line turned, without Kovalchuk, of course, turned out to be David Clarkson, Travis Zajac, and Patrick Elias, Zach Parise, and David Clarkson. Yep. And Zajac was then with
Zubras and Sikora.
Thank you, Zubras. And that's right. This was Sikora's second tour of duty with the New Jersey Devils. He was not the most invisible Czech player in this game. We'll get to that in a moment. And your fourth line turned out to not only include Peter Harrell, but also had Ryan Carter and Steven Gionta, whereas Adam Larson played next to Anton Volchenkov. And your defense still had the boss pairings of Andy Green with Mark Fain and Bryce Salvador with Marek Zidlisky.
So for this replay of the game, we have Kenny Albert on the call with Pierre Maguire between the benches, and that will become a point of contention later for us in particular. Just to note, Brizgalov at this point in the series was 4-0 against the Devils with the win in Game 1 and had beaten them all three times during the regular season, including shutting them out twice. This is someone who initially it looked like he had the Devils figured out, but as we learn later in this game and later on in the series, it is not the case. And really, you could already start to see signs of that because the Devils did put up, you know, after being shut out twice, they managed to get three goals on him in Game 1. So it's not like he was impossible for them. It's just that he had gotten the best of them in the first couple of matchups. But we get this game going, and this Elias Parisi-Clarkson unit starts quickly. They really start cycling the puck very well. Parisi's strong on it, and the first couple of flurries are in the Devils' favor.
Absolutely, but unfortunately, things break down in a counterattack later on. And it just goes into a fourth-line versus fourth-line matchup. And to give you a sense of how stacked and how deep the Flyers were, their fourth line was Matt Reed, Wayne Simmonds, and Braden Schenn. And Pierre Maguire, I regrettably have to say, he was correct. That's not your typical fourth line because those three players are way too good to be on a fourth line.
Yep.
All three of them, each of them. The play breaks down. Matt Reed gets an easy chance in front where he just kind of duffs it. He doesn't really get a clean shot on it. It gets stopped, but he ends up getting the rebound. He's kind of in no man's land. Steven Gionta is behind the play. Mark Fain is kind of stuck in the middle. So Reed has a wide open shot and he's able to get it past the sprawled out Brodeur for the game's first goal.
Yeah. And this is an interesting thing to note as well, because it was the first Flyer shot of the game. Like I said, the Devils started with a bunch of, you know, flurry of attack, and this comes through and you're thinking, okay, this fourth line is completely outmatching the Devils' fourth line with, you know, Kovalchuk out, with everything switched up. And the interesting thing to note is that something that the broadcasters noted, and that the Flyers participated in 7 games of the playoffs so far, and the team scoring second won every single game up to that point. And we know obviously how this game ends. So it's an interesting thing that the Flyers weren't able to keep their initial, you know, goal scoring momentum, but they did eventually warm to this game in the first period. They managed to send some shots on goal. There was a crossbar as well. There's a lot of good things happening for the Flyers right after they score the goal, and the Devils are kind of sitting back initially.
Until James Van Riemsdyk takes the first penalty of the game, mm-hmm. where he takes a slashing call. And then almost immediately on that power play, things are just broken down. And Zach Parise gets a one-on-one with Brizgalov, and he hammers the post with authority. Like, it was one of those plays where you just see him, you realize, oh my goodness, he's wide open. And then unfortunately, he doesn't beat the goal frame. So, yeah.
And the Devils' power play looked great. Actually,
it
looked really nice. It was moving. They were moving the puck around nicely. The only issue was the one that was the most obvious issue, in that Peter Harrell was taking the Ilya Kovalchuk position.
Right. And obviously the Flyers penalty killers targeted that. And as you would, I mean, it's not only a player that's normally not playing that position, it was a player that normally doesn't play forward. Mm-hmm. You know, it is interesting to point out that even back in 2012, you still saw the 1-3-1 from both sides. In fact, the Flyers tended to play in this format too, where that was, you know, that formation of power play tactics has endured for the better part of the last decade. And we even got to see that back then, even with the Devils sticking Zajac in the bumper in the middle of the formation and sticking a big body in front. I believe it was Zubris in some cases, mm-hmm. or Clarkson. So yeah, but Peter Harold, obviously he was just put there to give him a different look, and the Flyers took that look.
Yeah, and there's a lot of victimizing Peter Harold. The Flyers got some opportunities shorthanded as well, as Larson was pretty fortunate to have a 2-on-1 go off of him, but it was getting very close. So the Flyers, while they weren't getting too many shots on goal, they were finding some good lanes and good opportunities, and yes, the Devils weren't really punching back initially.
Not at first, but eventually, bit by bit, more and more as the period wore on, it did help that, you know, Timonen took a hooking call, and even though Steven Gion took a slash later in the period, you know, eventually you start noticing the Devils are starting to push forward a little bit more often. Mm-hmm. They're getting a few more opportunities. They're starting to, quote unquote, buzz a little bit more. And the next thing you know, the shots become even at 9-9, and then it becomes 10-9, 11-9, and so forth. The Devils definitely ended the period in a much stronger position than they did at the start of the game. And truth be told, you know, Brodeur did his job. He stopped all the other shots except for Reed's second attempt, you know, so it was 1-0. And it would have been an otherwise okay end to a road period coming off a playoff loss if it wasn't for Bryce Salvador deciding to staple a flyer to the boards literally at the end of the period to deny him a chance of playing the puck, which is, you know, textbook interference.
Yeah, so the Flyers, with their already potent power play, get another opportunity that comes with a full 2 minutes with fresh legs after the intermission. Again, this entire game, basically, it didn't feel like it was out of control for the Devils at any point. It didn't feel too nervous. They definitely did get fortunate with some bounces that went their way, but really they worked to limit Philadelphia's opportunities, and this all started, I think, that Timonen slashing call was actually pretty weak. That turned the momentum back in favor of the Devils.
It was a weak call. Yeah.
It was like barely anything there in terms of hooking on the hands, but it was killing off this first penalty that started the second period that really put the Devils on the front foot, and they never looked back. Philadelphia did not get a single shot on this power play, and really, they didn't get a single shot in this period until about a minute and a half left. So, what happens in between then? It's all Devils.
Yeah, I mean, the Devils racked up 25 shooting attempts and 12 shots on net, all the while Pierre Maguire is constantly claiming that the Flyers were comfortable with the pace of the game, that they were, you know, they were understanding the pace. It even got to a point where Kenny Albert, the play-by-play guy, had to challenge Pierre Maguire to say, Pierre, my understanding is that the Flyers being outshot 12-0 right now, right? like
you just have to make sure he was still watching.
Yeah, exactly. Like, it's one thing to say I'm comfortable with my situation in the sense of they were up 1-0, and you could argue that during those 18 shotless minutes, you know, there were some rushes up ice where they could have had a legitimate scoring chances. They could have crossed the Royal Road for a one-timer. They could have made this happen, but they just failed. Like, yes, there were some bounces that went the Devils' favor, absolutely, but there were guys missing passes going behind players, passes not missing the mark, Devils defensemen just stepping up to deny the pass to begin with, or forwards back-checking, and the Devils just kept rolling forward and forward and forward. You know, they were putting the pressure on Brizgalov. So I'm going to be real with you. If you're comfortable with that, even with a 1-0 lead, you know, your team sucks. And you as a commentator are basically trying to defend that, oh, we're fine with being terrible.
There's 100% you know, playing with fire. Like, it felt less like the Devils were chasing the game and more like it was a matter of time before they even things up. And it's one thing to say it's a matter of time and one thing to actually do it, but that second period, they probably got as close as they could have in terms of running the play. The opportunities themselves weren't necessarily like all A-plus opportunities, but they really managed to basically maintain possession of the puck the entire period. And there's some interesting moments that happened in between there. I mean, there was a too many men call that was obviously missed, but you can argue that that's makeup for calling the Kimmo Timonen hold Let's say
Yeah.
that's the case. There's a couple chances for Henrique, and he's very squirrely all game. He finds some nice opportunities. Volchenkov gets a shot off, and we forget how physical he was until we're reminded 15 times by Pierre as well. And really, they did everything but score in this period. They managed to hold the Flyers completely in their own end until the last minute and a half, where they managed to get two shots on goal and not much else.
And the crowd cheered derisively when that shot was taken,
Yep.
and it was a 60-footer from, the blue line. Like, it went had like zero less than zero chance of going in. Like, even the fans were upset. Like, it's bad when your team is leading in a playoff game at the end of the second intermission and you're getting booed off the ice. I mean, they understood that Brizgalov was the man, and it was basically him all period. And ironically, the best save of the period did not come from Brizgalov, though. It came from Steve Bernier.
Yeah. And
And this was a criticism I wrote back in my recap of this game in 2012, which you can see, of course, on the site, is that the Devils, I felt, were being a little too cute, a little too clever with their scoring situations. Like, there were plenty of situations where they don't necessarily make the most optimal pass, or they decide, I'm going to shoot this puck from 40 feet when, even though I could take a second to skate 20 feet closer and take a better shot. There was a lot of "we're just shooting to shoot here"
Right.
on some of these cases. But Carter, like, Bernier dropped the puck off in front of the net for Carter, and Carter had Brizgalov beaten dead to rights. All he had to do was lift the puck 3 inches off the ground and he would have scored. But Bernier was cutting across, and as fate would have it, Bernier blocked Carter's goal.
Yep.
Like, it was like it was one of those cases where the Devils were just doing so well, except they just couldn't score. And unfortunately, in a playoff game, you need to score. Simple as.
Yeah, it's
And
one of those like, oh God, what are we gonna have to do here? Like, what has to
and it,
happen to beat this guy?
and and you have McGuire in your ears going on about, the Flyers are appreciating the comfortable play and how, the Devils weren't being aggressive enough, and, they're really missing Kovalchuk. If they had Kovalchuk, things would be different. And it's like, Pierre, shut up. Can I get Tony Siragusa instead? Can I get Darryl Johnston to join Kenny Albert? And can I get anybody else than Pierre McGuire calling this?
Yeah, that would have been nice because we wouldn't have had to hear the same quotes about the Flyers being comfortable despite getting destroyed by shots in that second period. And the ice was so tilted that even before they got that first shot off, Laviolette took his time out. It was 10-0
That's
in
right.
shots with like 9 minutes left in the second, and there was no Kovalchuk in the game. So the Devils are finding so many ways to get things on net and really take over the pace of the game. And you could realistically say that this was the period where the series turned on its head.
Yeah, and just as a point of reference, at the time, there was a slow meme coming out of Broad Street Hockey and Flyer fans that Peter Laviolette was the master of the timeout. I'm going to spoil something for you, Dan. No, there's no such thing as a master of the timeout, and this timeout did not help them.
Yeah.
Nor did it help them that Claude Giroux turned. He was also being called a magician at the time, so I said, yes, he is a magician, and he made himself disappear. He joined Jaromir Jagr, who, Dan, did you realize that Jaromir Jagr was in this game?
So I didn't realize that this was the time where he was a Flyer, actually, and
Yes, you wouldn't have known from this game that he was a
Well, he
Flyer.
made the one pass, and we'll talk about that later. The one, it I would say not even made the pass. He whiffed the one pass that might have put away the game for the Flyers. But that all being said, yeah, he was barely noticeable, which was strange, and he didn't exactly play on their first line. He was what, on their third or something like that?
Yeah, and again, it's a testament to how the Flyers constructed their lineup. Their forwards, again, I can't stress this enough. They were super deep at forward that you can put Jagr, and mind you, he's not 40 at this time, so he still had plenty of gas in the tank. You can put a guy of his skill set on a third line, just like you can put a Braden Schenn and a Wayne Simmonds on your fourth line.
Right.
But again, based on how he and a number of other Flyers played in this game, Max Talbot being another good example of, like, Giroux and Jagr being totally invisible at 5-on-5. There was just a lot of passengers on the Flyers, and I can understand why Laviolette maybe called that timeout, in the middle of the period, not off an icing, not off an offside, basically just to say, guys, we're in the playoffs. We're getting run off the ice right now. So either score a goal or, get your you know what's in gear.
Yeah, and Pierre was alluding to that as well. He mentioned midway through the first, when the pace had really started to slow down, he mentioned Laviolette yelling to his bench saying, boys, we got to pick it up. Like, we got to pick it up. We got to keep moving. And it seems that the message was not received, but it didn't even take, you know, that length of time in the period. It took a penalty for the Flyers to actually produce their first shot of the second. So
that's right. Giroux slashed Henrique, and then Henrique retaliated.
Yep. And he slashed his stick right out of his hands.
Well, yeah, and that's always going to get you a call. Right. Like, that's like
that one's easier
obvious.
To see.
Yeah, exactly. And it was one of the few bad things Henrique otherwise did in an awesome game where, you know, he played over 21 minutes. He had 8 shooting attempts on his own, 4 shots on net. You know, he was almost he was 7 for 15 at faceoffs. But the point is that he had a great game, and that penalty was stupid.
Yeah, it was a bad one. But as we know about the Flyers' power play, they were completely disorganized. And my note here was that, like, you can almost tell that the doubt's starting to creep in based on how this period went. Like, yes, they're maintaining the lead, but even Brizgalov was starting to mishandle pucks in his own zone. There was some miscommunication going on, mm-hmm. and you can really see the mood shift in not only the Flyers themselves, but in the building. It got significantly quieter as they saw their team just get bodied in that second period. The only thing that wasn't in the Devils' favor was the score.
Exactly, and it's a testament to how well the Devils as a whole played. Like, this was the period where you saw Marek Zdlicky. Now, for those of you who don't remember, I would describe Zdlicky's game playing style as a gambler. defense is not a thing he likes to do. He likes to gamble.
We call it high event.
Yeah, high event is the technical analytic version. Gambler is the more, like, you know, best way I could sum it up. He's the guy who says, okay, I'm playing blackjack and I just got a 10 ace. You know what? I'm not taking the insurance. I'm seeing the dealer has a black ace as well. I'm going to go pinch in here. I'm going to make this play happen. And just like in gambling, when you're winning, you feel like you're going to win forever. But when you're losing, it feels like you're never going to win. Mm-hmm. But this was a night where Zdlicky was winning blackjack. He was beating the dealer. He was stacking the chips, all his pinches, all his times to step up, all his movements with the puck were absolutely perfect. This game was an example. While he was pointless in the game, this game was a great example of why Zdlicky had, you know, he was getting 20 to 22 minutes per game. Mm-hmm. This was also a great game for the Green Fane pairing that shut down a lot of the Flyers offense before they could get a shot off. I think Pierre McGuire literally turned into an Andy Green fan, like, near, you know, early in the third period, which, hey, I'm glad he got on the train, because Green and Fane was legitimately, you know, a top tier pairing, despite, you know, Green being an undrafted defenseman and Fane being a fifth rounder that got his shot during the John McClain era.
Pierre was, you know, kind of dribbling all over himself, talking about undrafted players, and he was talking about David Clarkson, how great of a season he had. And it's almost like you can tell that he notices Andy Green and is like, oh, who's this? Hello.
Yeah. Oh, he made a great play, and I've never heard of him, and he's thinner than I am. Like,
gave him the eyes.
Give him the big up. Volchenkov had a very strong game next to Larson. Mm-hmm. This was a really good game, in my opinion. Like, a lot of players stepped up in this second period and would go on to continue their good play in the third period, which helped lead to the decisive result that we saw at the end of this. And I just wanted to highlight them that, it, as you said, Dan, it started in this period, the scoreless period. It didn't happen in the third period of wonder and excitement.
Right. And so let's take a quick break before we talk about the third period of wonder and excitement, because there's a lot more wonder and excitement this period than there has been in the game up to this point. So we'll be right back after this word. All right, welcome back. And we rejoin in progress. The shots as it stands now are 25 to something like 12 or 13 for the Flyers. 25 for the Devils, 13 for the Flyers, 12 for the Flyers, maybe. I don't know which one it
11
is.
11 for the Flyers.
11 for the Flyers. Okay, so it's even less.
It's not even that much.
It was 12-2 in that second period in favor of the Devils. And as we mentioned, the Devils have pretty much wrestled control of this game entirely from the Flyers. And there was a possibility that this momentum may not have lasted, as the Zdlicky that we were praising immensely before took an offensive zone elbowing penalty. And ridiculously impotent Flyers power play hits the ice again, and the Devils' best regular season power play, or sorry, penalty kill, completely shuts them down.
Well, you have to give a lot of credit to Scott Hartnell. Now, for those of you who are not aware of the Philadelphia Flyers, they have a long tradition of supporting and highlighting character players, players with toughness, Dan, players with grit. You know, none of these, you know, little weak, wussy, little skill set players. We're talking about men, Dan.
Yep.
And Scott Hartnell was a man, and like a man, he got his he lost his stick, and he saw Travis Zajac starting to skate away on a shorthanded breakaway, so he grabbed his stick in plain sight of everybody, and like a man, he went to the penalty box to end his team's power play, to give a 4-on-4 situation that would turn out to be very good for the New Jersey Devils.
Yeah, he less so grabs Zajac's stick and more so borrowed it without his permission. he was like, I lost mine, can I get yours? As if this 4-on-5 opportunity that was developing for the Devils wouldn't be the most obvious place to call a stick just suddenly going missing from one of the penalty killer's hands. And so we end up with this 4-on-4 opportunity that 4-on-4 moment, I'd say. I guess it's not really an opportunity because it's still even strength, but it ends up being an opportunity for the Devils as Zubris. He leads this initial rush. He does a power move towards the net and doesn't see Peter Harrell just furiously calling for the puck.
You could hear him yell Z in the broadcast.
It was impressive because now we're getting a bunch of broadcasts that don't have crowd noise in them given the current sports situation, but despite all the crowd noise that was going on, and maybe this was the Devil silencing the crowd a little bit in that second period, but Harold was screaming for the puck. He was ready to receive that. It didn't matter in the end, as that play eventually develops into a dump in, you know, the force in from Zubris, and the puck eventually, another shot from the rush goes, I think it's from Harold, and it goes to Zubris, and Zubris drops it off to a Larson that's pinching in, a la the advice of Larry Robinson. And Larson puts it short side, glove side, and the Devils tie the game up, and all that effort is suddenly yielded a situation that's very favorable to New Jersey if they can carry this momentum forward.
Right, and I want to give a special shout-out to Briere and Van Rimsdyk on this play, because just after Peter Harrell took the shot, both of them started pushing forward as if they were going to try to catch Adam Larson in a two-on-one. And thanks to Zubris and Timonen, and Zubris was bodying Kimmo Timonen here. Like, you know, so Harrell's shot is low. Brizgalov stops it. It cuts through the bodies, and because it comes out the way it does, Zubris is like in the perfect physical position to basically box out Timonen, because Zubris is a big dude.
Right.
Like, the Lithuanian freight train is a legit 6'6", you know, 220, you know, big stack of man meat. You know, you're not going to just get past this guy when he's boxing you out. And he deftly, Dan, drops a backhanded pass to put Larson in total space. And because Briere and Van Rims like pushed forward early, that's why Larson was able to feel comfortable to pinch up like he was Marek Zdlisky, take that step up into the circle, and fire a beautiful shot past Brizgalov. And even though that only tied up the game, you could tell, especially in retrospect, you could tell that was almost like a stomach punch to the Flyers. Like, they were just doubled over after that goal.
Because they
just did not do much of anything after that.
Yeah, and if you thought that the momentum was very lopsided at before that, you'd think that the Flyers would try to counterpunch, would try to, you know, get a little energy from the crowd going back. No. The Devils continue to absolutely buzz around the Flyers zone. They're completely pushing the pace, and Simmons does get an opportunity a little, 5 minutes-ish into the third, but the bounces are going the Devils' way off the boards. Brizgalov looks completely unsure of himself handling the puck. Brodeur is basically, after that first period, just pitching a tent in the Devil's zone waiting for things to happen. And the Devils, you know, they keep up the pace, but at some point they have to realize that, listen, we've just played 3 overtime games. I don't know what the fatigue factor is, 3 overtime games in a row. I don't know what the fatigue factor is like. We have to get at least one more, because you never know what could happen in overtime. They could have bodied them the whole game, and then the Flyers get some silly goal and all of a sudden it's over.
Yeah. Exactly. And that's always the big concern with, especially given the situation with the series, you know, the playoffs are the ultimate results oriented, you know, part of the game. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter if you outshoot them, outplay them, control the ice. It matters. Did you score? Did you, because if you didn't, you know, you go into the potential center down 2-0 in the series and everything changes. Mm-hmm. Thankfully, the Flyers did not counterpunch, or rather, they did not counterpunch effectively, and the Devils kept going. Henrique had a great opportunity in the slot that he got denied on. But you could tell the Flyers were basically, they were discombobulated. Mm-hmm. Like, they were just disorganized. Like, it was like in a 1-1 game, like, in retrospect, I think Laviolette probably wished he had his timeout then.
Yep, I was just going to say.
That would have been the best time to say, hey, guys, it's 1-1. We're not down, 4-1 yet. Spoiler alert, the final score of this game was 4-1. But, relax. You got this. Just start putting some good things together and you'll build things back. You guys, this is the second round. You're not a bunch of scrubs. That would have been the message I would have given if I was Peter Laviolette in that situation. But he burned his time out in the second period where nobody apparently listened to him then. And he didn't get listened to very well in the second intermission. Lord knows whatever he said. And so the Devils just keep knocking on the door and we finally get another breakthrough.
Yeah, and this happens very quickly. It happens off of a faceoff, basically, as the puck is initially pushed towards the net. There's Couturier wins the draw, but then Parisi, yes, kind of outmuscles Grossman, and Coburn's stick breaks on the back end of all of this. And Parisi, yeah, finds himself right in front. Instead of what I assume he was going for in terms of a shot, he finds Clarkson, who is completely open. There's at least 3 Flyers standing around doing nothing. And Clarkson,
and Coburn without a stick.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And Coburn trying to do the best he can without a stick. You're right. But Clarkson follows that in, and we get the pretty iconic shot of Clarkson landing on top of the net almost in a crowd surfing fashion as the Devils take a 2-1 lead. And this wouldn't be the first time that Clarkson scored a silly goal against the Flyers this series, but this would be arguably the most important one.
And just as importantly for Clarkson, this was his first goal of the playoffs. I think people forget that this was the season where Clarkson had 30 goals. Mm-hmm. Like, if you're wondering why Toronto paid him a ridiculous amount of money, mm-hmm, ludicrous money on a ludicrous contract, it was partially because of this season. So the fact that he was goalless throughout the entire Florida series was shocking, considering you would expect your 30 goal scorer from the regular season to be, a little bit more on the score sheet. Mm-hmm. But this was a classic example of a bang-bang play. It was a perfect example of how hard of a worker Parise was back then, and to a degree still is, but like, he's older and now he's on Minnesota where they may not work so hard. Yes, that was a shot at the Wild. Take that. Please lose to Vancouver, by the way. But more seriously, though, this was the definition of bang-bang play. Like, you run this play 10 times, you may get 10 different results. But this was the one time where the puck was perfectly hit off of Clarkson's stick blade. It beats Brizgalov clean. Brizgalov did not have much of a chance in it. And of course, because it's David Clarkson, he's kind of out of control with the skating, so he just piles into the goal frame and gives us an iconic goal celebration with Parise literally hugging him while he's draped over the water bottle.
Yeah, that one felt real good. That one was the moment where the entire push that the Devils had had up until this point felt vindicated. They really took this lead, and even more credit to them at that point, they did not sit back on it. It was 31-18 in shots on goal with about 7:38 left in the game. And this Parisi Eliash Clarkson line was buzzing yet again, but it's not them who end up scoring the backbreaking third goal. It's actually Travis Zajac, and a Steven Gionta shot goes to Zajac as he falls. Apparently, everyone is really interested in how Steven Gionta falls, because 3 Flyers are staring at him in the crease as Zajac takes a wraparound, is basically unchallenged by Brizgalov himself as well, and he finds an entire open net with a backhand to make it 3-1 New Jersey.
Well, you have to give a lot of credit to Dinas Zubris, because he was also crashing the net at the same time. And again, 6'6", 220 pounds of man meat and so forth, draws a lot of attention, more so than the barely 5'7". I don't think he even is 5'7". He might be 5'6". Mm-hmm. Steven Gionta. But yeah, Gionta just charges the net here, gets a close shot. His shot is actually blocked by a Flyer. It actually didn't get to Brizgalov. But Zajac was also charging that. He gets a close shot at the right post that Brizgalov stops. The puck fortunately bounces right back to Zajac in such close quarters. So Zajac just continues his momentum to go around the net and wrap it around, while, Gustafsson is just like, I'm going to try to catch you, but I'm just not, forget it. It's just not happening. And this is just another example of how completely out of sorts the Flyers were, because nobody in Orange was at the left post. Like, mm-hmm. you see the Giunta was cutting to the right. You saw Zajac going down the right. You see Big Z coming down the middle. Logic dictates that you have somebody on the back end to prevent what Zajac would have done. At least have a body there. So if he's going to do it, make him, you know, make him feel something.
Yeah.
That was my hand, you know, my fist hitting my hand as a representation of what I'm talking about.
Emphasis.
Good
radio.
But nobody was there. Absolutely nobody was there. And Zajac scores a lovely looking wraparound. It was his fifth playoff goal. He's the only Devil to have not scored his first playoff goal of the playoffs in this particular game. Put the Devils up 3-1, and you could hear a pin drop at the Wells Fargo Center. If you thought you could hear Parise yelling and yapping in celebration with Clarkson, then you totally heard everybody happy for Zajac here, because the Flyers fans were just like, forget it, man.
Yeah.
It's Philadelphia. Forget it, man.
Yeah, the Devils bench was hyped. They were ready to celebrate that Zajac goal, and the energy from the Flyers has been completely sapped at this point. The building is silent. It is very clear that this game was something that, while the scoreline may not suggest that it was very lopsided, it was indeed extremely lopsided. And the best opportunity that the Flyers had, they actually Dinah Zubrus took a penalty with about 5 minutes left, and in order to
I don't even know what the penalty was. It was called interference, but I've watched it, and even back in 2012, I'm like, I don't know what this penalty was.
Yeah, and it was definitely a weird one. I don't know what they saw, but at the end, it led to a very fun stat, and that is a Bryce Salvador shorthanded goal. That is not something you'll see very often, or even ever really on a casual basis. So as Brizgalov came out to make it a 6-on-4 opportunity for Philadelphia, Salvador just rolled a shot towards the empty net for a shorthanded goal. And if they were hyped for the Zajac goal, they were triply as hyped for the Salvador goal, because it was his first in 100 games. He hadn't scored a goal in any game since March 2010, and he ices this with an empty net shorthanded goal. Bryce Salvador, first of the playoffs, and we know that this playoff year he would be ridiculous.
Yeah, he would go on a heater. He would get on fire. You know, if you touch the man, you would get a first degree burn on your finger. That's how hot his scoring was. But this was the genesis of this, and it was one of the, you know, empty net goals by their definition, Dan, are typically not very pretty ones. You know, a lot of them, more often than not, they're prayers from 180 feet away, and you know, they miss the net more often than not. And your hope in a situation like this, you don't get mad about it because it's a penalty kill. So you're allowed to do that anyway. Mm-hmm. You know, when it's even up, when it's even strength and it becomes icing, then you just start getting worried, because like, great, now you gave up a 5-on-6 and you're starting in your own end and you can't change. And okay. Anyway, but Salvador throws up this arc that barely makes it beyond the Flyers' blue line and just dribbles, bounces, you know, heaves its way into the net. And I didn't catch which Flyer was the first to the empty net. I don't know if it was Giroux, but he was so disgusted by it, he didn't even bother smashing his stick against the net in frustration. He was just like, forget it. I'm done. I'm just done. Just end this. You know, while Danny Briere was probably puck watching, he wasn't, you know, because Danny Briere puck watches a lot. Right. That's the joke. But no, this was a killer. It just boosted the score. The Devils and the few Devil fans in Philadelphia were just beyond ecstatic, and rightfully so for Salvador. He played a very yeoman's-like game, workman-like game, you know, good, smart game. Nothing silly from Salvador except for his stupid interference penalty at the end of the first period. Mm-hmm. And then we got to see some Philadelphia being Philadelphia, Dan.
Yeah, and the scrappiness at the end of the game manifested as a roughing penalty matching for Clarkson and Andreas Lilja, a misconduct for Maxime Talbot, and then at the 20-minute mark of the third period, Wayne Simmonds gets a roughing and a misconduct. So clearly they're upset about the result of this game. Clearly there's some chippiness after, but it was largely inconsequential because none of the Devils really got involved. This team wasn't one that had a lot of ruffians. This team basically was Clarkson and that's it.
Yeah, and there was even some stuff that wasn't called. For example, Giroux threw a pretty blatant slew foot on Clarkson shortly after the empty net goal, like a straight up, like, I'm just going to ram my knee into the back of your knee. And thankfully Clarkson was not injured from it, but you know, it was just a testament to Giroux, you know, being a perfect Philadelphia Flyer, you know, getting mean and nasty when things don't go their way and not winning a championship in the last 30 years. You know, that's just, you know, how he does. He's a Flyer legend, Dan. If you can't get the win, make it look mean. And, you know, Lilja was unhappy and Clarkson was understandably unhappy because Giroux slew-footed him a minute earlier. The puck went in the Devil's bench. They had a beef. Talbot got in the middle of that beef and I think he threw a sucker punch. That's probably what he got in the 10. And then Simmons got his 2 and a 10, presumably for throwing a hit at the end of the game and lipping off to the ref. You know, I think the refs just wanted to make a point to say, look, that was stupid. Get out of here.
Yeah. And the Flyers, the narrative surrounding the Flyers in that playoff season was about how much they frustrated the Penguins and how much they physically intimidated them. I think because the Devils generally avoided engaging with them on situations like this, like, it was literally just Clarkson that they were all going after. He got under all of their skin extremely quickly. And, you know, none of the other Devils really engaged with any sort of chicanery like this. You know, Brodeur maybe a little bit because at this point he had seen it all. But other than that, I don't think the Flyers were able to effectively get in the Devils' heads that way, as they just kind of kept things down low. And this was a needed total team effort without Kovalchuk. I mean, he made such an impact on that team and on that playoff run that this game was something that it was essentially do or die without him. Do you get too demoralized to, you know, play well at home, worrying about the status of his health, or do you win this game and hope that he can come back, but know that you can win without him? And I think this proved to a lot of members of that team that they were so much deeper than just their star players.
Yeah, and one of the results of this series as a whole, you know, looking back at what I've written on the site in 2012 and what other fans on the site said in 2012, is that one of the big reasons for that was the game plan. It was the coaching. This was a series where Peter DeBoer basically outcoached Peter Laviolette out of a paper bag. Okay, that's a terrible metaphor, but go with it. The point is that DeBoer put together his plan such that, yes, they didn't have Kovalchuk for this game, but you know what? We're going to stick to this. We're going to continue to be aggressive with a two-man forecheck. We're going to continue to push forward on the penalty kill, even without Kovalchuk, because he was a regular on the penalty kill back then. You know, we're going to continue the same style of play that, you know what? Yeah, Peter Harold on the wing on a 1-3-1 power play looks awkward, and it was awkward. But at the end of the game, you can't sit there and say that Peter Harold had a bad game. No. Like, the dude had 4 shots in under 7 minutes of ice time. You just wanted him to fill a spot, not do anything stupid, move some pucks around, job done, you know?
He was present and not a detriment. That's all he had to do.
Correct. And it's a testament to how well the team performed. It's a testament to how the coaching took care of this game that the team performed as well as they did in total, and especially after that second period, because, you know, believe it or not, Dan, you know, at the time I was still concerned that, as a fan, you know, the Devils did everything but score in that second period. Your concern is it's 1-0. Maybe Philadelphia gets their minds right and starts playing a hockey game. And, you know, you lose the game in the third period, or you fail to tie it up in the third period because the Flyers tighten everything up. You know, there was definitely a real concern that, you know, that second period was your shot and you didn't score on it. But it turned out, thankfully, the Flyers continued to play a bad hockey game and the Devils continued to play a good game. They didn't get demoralized by not scoring. And again, I credit the coaches as much as I credit the players.
That 2012 theme was resilience. It was resilient to get out of that first round with 2 overtime wins when trailing the series 3-2. It was resilient to play this game so well, despite giving up the first goal, but to play this game so well without their best player really, you know, I think captured the spirit of that team better than any other game in that run. I think, you know, you can make a couple of arguments for games against the Rangers where basically they had a similar narrative in terms of the game, but Lundqvist managed to outduel Brodeur on those nights. But with all this being said, you could really see them start to come together and show the capabilities they need for a deep run by beating this Flyers team without Kovalchuk. And so that 4-1 result that happened way back in May of 2012, May 1st, that's our game for the day. And as usual, once there are updates on, you know, concrete updates, we want to say, once there are concrete updates on any sort of developments within the NHL labor talks or the return to play format or anything regarding trades or transactions, we'll be sure to have it. But we'll also be sure to let you know if we're watching a game off the top, and we'll link it in the post that has the podcast as well. So, John, anything else to add before we let the people go for the day?
Not at the moment, Dan, but I'd like to thank all the people who continue to listen to us amid a very, very long off season.
Mm-hmm. Make sure you keep an eye out for information. Make sure that you don't tweet about things prematurely, and also make sure you're keeping everyone safe around you and really keeping yourself safe, because what's the point of watching hockey if you're not well enough to watch it? That being said, thanks for joining us on the Garden State of Hockey podcast. We'll see you guys next week.